statistics show that 1 in 4 women will be sexually abused or assaulted in their lifetime and will, on average, be up to 4 times more likely to develop depression, suicidal thoughts, post-traumatic stress disorder, drug and alcohol abuse, eating disorders, relationship problems, and physical and/or mental health issues. And if unhealed, will not be able to live free, purposeful, and joyful lives. But today's guest says there is hope, there is a way to heal from abuse, and it can be done in 7 steps. Hello, everyone. I'm Pamela Brewer, welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk, and very pleased to introduce to you Carolyn Hauser Carson, a naturopathic doctor, a family constellations practitioner, humanistic psychotherapist, a woman's empowerment expert, and the author of Blossom, Your 7-Step Journey to Healing Childhood Sexual Abuse and Creating Your Dream Life. Carolyn Hauser Carson, welcome to Mind Talk.
Thanks for having me.
Carolyn, I want to start out with asking you about some of the things that are in your areas of expertise. I think most of us know what a naturopathic doctor is, but tell me about a family constellations practitioner. What does that mean?
Family constellations is a modality that was brought to our world from an Austrian. He was a missionary and a psychotherapist, and he had been in Africa and had observed that, and I think it was a Zulu tribe, I'm not 100% sure, but he observed that when somebody was sick in the tribe or somebody had done something that we would deem criminal or not right, instead of singling that person out and working just with that person or punishing just that person, they would come together as a tribe and work with it as a whole systematically. And so this approach is also called systematic approach. And so he basically saw that in order to heal anything, we really need to look at it from a bigger picture. And the work that's developed out of it, essentially, when it's done now, you know, the way we do it, it helps to make the subconscious visible. And with that, you can replace unhealthy programming or unhealthy pictures that you have in your subconscious into a healthy one. And by doing so, create a very different life, because we mostly create or operate from our subconscious programming. And so when you can make changes at that level, it's very quick and doesn't take any willpower, because it's almost like you're automatically a different person. So it's very powerful, and it actually saved my life at one point. That's how I got involved with it. I was severely anorexic and bulimic from when I was 10 years old on until in my early 20s, and nothing helped. I tried everything. I was even blessed by an Indian saint, and my mom tried everything that she could: art therapies, self-expression therapy, and nothing helped. And then she took me to a family constellations workshop, and I was guided through a 45-minute process, and within 3 months of that, I was able to shake the eating disorders. And so that's kind of what set me on the path that I'm on today.
Within 3 months, that sounds close to miraculous.
Yeah, it is really, when you see what this work does, to me it was a complete miracle, because at that point I didn't think I was going to live till 30. My prognosis of recovery was at 5%. So it was a miracle.
With a 5% recovery rate, there really wasn't a great deal to look forward to.
No, and all I just wanted was to, you know, have children, be able to get married, and that just seemed so far out of reach. Yeah.
Tell me about, I also described you as a humanistic psychotherapist. What does that mean?
So humanistic is everything that came kind of after Jung, the Jungian psychotherapy, and then Gestalt and some other more client-centric therapy.
Okay.
That's all Carl Rogers, and I don't know if you know the Esalen Institute, kind of they were leaders in developing a psychotherapy model that was based more on the client and the experience that the client has right now, and then work with that instead of analyzing the past and going backwards.
So instead of being in analysis 5 days a week for years and years and years, this is a process that's very, very different.
Yes, yeah.
Now, the name of your book is Blossom, and we'll get to what Blossom actually means in a moment. But the subtitle, Your Seven-Step Journey to Healing Childhood Sexual Abuse and Creating Your Dream Life. How did you come to write a book about this particular issue?
So, as I just shared, you know, I started my own kind of healing journey because of the eating disorders and then being able to recover from them. And so I really spent my 20s traveling the world, learning from different healers, learning about different modalities, and really immersing myself in learning how to be a constellations facilitator, family constellations facilitator. And so by the time I was in my late 20s and I had my first child, I really thought, you know, I had worked through it all, because obviously when you're trained as a psychotherapist, you need, you know, part of it is like you need to work through all your stuff. That's kind of the job description, at least it was for me. And I had started seeing clients, and life was, you know, life was normal. I was married, I had a child, all those things were in place. And then when my daughter turned three, with her turning three, all of a sudden memories of earliest childhood sexual abuse started to come back, or it was first a feeling, and then I went to someone who helped me with it, and I realized that I had actually been sexually abused very early on, from 3 till 7. And when I first found out, it was very emotional and very disturbing, because I felt like, oh my God, I've spent my whole 20s working through my stuff. You know, I hadn't made any money, because literally my whole 20s I was working on myself, and my mom would say, oh my God, when are you going to start working? You know, when are you going to start making money? And I'm like, oh, mother, it's going to pay off. Just trust me. This is what I need to do. And then I've had a few years of reprieve, and then, you know, I found out this. And so I was pretty, it threw me for a hoop. And luckily I had a spiritual mentor who kind of put it in perspective and said, hey, look, you have spent the last 10 years, you know so much about healing, you know, there's probably a reason why you're finding this out now. And my whole life I had known that I wanted to be a writer and help people. I'd always looked up to Marianne Williamson and Neil Donald Walsh and so forth. So when those things came together, I realized that really my first book, and that's what my first book needed to be about. And before I wrote the book, I basically took a group of women kind of through the material, and then took their feedback, because the book actually is a course. It's a course that you can take yourself through. That's the way it's structured, because I really wanted, it's not just, I didn't want people to just learn conceptually. I really wanted them to be able to go on a journey and facilitate themselves, right, so that they can be empowered. And so I did it with a group first, took their feedback, and then wrote and published the book.
So clearly for you, as you created this book and went through the process of refining it, you came to it having suffered through your own traumatic experiences, beginning at 3 until 7, and then your parents divorced, and that brought about another huge and traumatic change for you. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so, you know, looking back, I realized that I started giving away my power when I was 3, because even though I was only 3, I could have told somebody, could have gone to somebody, and I didn't. I made a choice to not say it out of love to protect the other person. And so for me, then, that set up a whole pattern of just giving away my power. And so when my parents divorced when I was 11, because literally consciously I thought I had the perfect childhood. You know, so for me, it came very much as a surprise. My parents never argued or anything like that, and I grew up very protected and went to private school and had lots of arts and, you know, lived in the countryside and played outside all day long and had so much freedom and everything. So when they split up, it was very unexpected. And so, again, rather than actually saying how I felt or you know, saying, hey, I'm here, I need help, because I felt so powerless, that's when the eating disorder started, they had already started, but that's where I went to have at least a little bit of sense of power over something.
So with your eating disorder, it felt like you were in control of something.
Yeah, I could do something nobody else could. You know, I lived on less than 500 calories for years and years and years.
That's quite a restrictive diet.
Yep, I ate apples and salad and I think dried bread crusts or something every once in a while I was allowed to have by myself.
You said that your mother's then boyfriend began to attempt to molest you, and when you finally were able to tell your mom, she kind of blamed you. What was that like for you?
That was actually the bigger wounding than, I mean, it was very confusing. Everything was very confusing that happened, and there was a lot of conflicting feelings because, and I've talked to a lot of, you know, people that have gone through abuse. Sometimes the body actually experiences pleasure, right? And it's like, on the one hand, it's like, oh, my body has this response, but I know it's so wrong. So tremendous amount of confusion. A lot of people think it makes people angry or you know, helpless, but what I've found actually for most people, the confusion is really then the shame and the guilt, obviously. So that was obviously bad. But then really my mom, out of her own reasons, not being able to really see what happened, right, out of her guilt feelings, she kind of had to go into denial. That actually was way more painful than what had actually happened. And I know for a lot of people, for a lot of women, they go through similar experiences. And unfortunately, you know, like you said, the numbers are so high. So if you have a parent that's gone through abuse and hasn't dealt with their abuse, it's going to be very hard for them to then see that that's going on with you, let alone protect you or be there for you. Right? And so it's very important that if you have gone through sexual abuse, that you do the work so that you can really be there for your child and not be in denial, right, and also protect your child. For example, you know, my parents left me with my grandfather who was an alcoholic, right? So if my parents would have been maybe more aware, you know, they could have protected me. Or like when you're healed, right, you can be more present to what's actually going on and you don't have to be in denial about things.
So your mother, in effect, was kind of trying to protect herself from mm-hmm. the pain that you were experiencing that in fact was unresolved for her, which you're right. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, there are certainly often there are situations where the reality of the abuse can feel so much too much that you want to shut down and ignore it and try to pretend that it didn't happen.
Yeah, it's a survive. You know, for her, that's what was necessary for her to go on and survive. You know, she had just gone through the divorce and felt really bad about that anyways, right? There was already a lot of guilt. And, I think, you know, for her to, you know, not get suicidal, I think that's what she had to do, right, to make it through.
You know, one of the sad things about, I mean, I know you said that as a 3-year-old you had the power to tell someone, but I also wonder if, aside from the fact that when children are abused, their abusers find ways overtly and covertly to tell them not to tell, and clearly there's a power imbalance, but, you know, I also wonder if maybe there was a part of you that knew that telling would not have gotten you any help, or at least that's what you believed as a 3-year-old.
I think that, you know, that I thought that people wouldn't believe. Plus, you know, I didn't even know really what was going on because I was just confused. I just know that something was wrong, right? So I didn't know that what was going on was, you know, inappropriate sexual behavior. I was 3. But I did know that something was wrong. And at the same time, I probably felt that, you know, people would just basically brush me off because I was little, you know, and just say, oh, I didn't feel taken seriously as a 3-year-old anyways, I think.
Well, you know, true. And I think many children don't,
yeah.
Which is part of what allows abuse to really flourish. Abusers know, particularly if they're abusing children, that it's likely going to be hard for that child to identify what's going on, to find somebody to tell, and also to find somebody to tell who will believe.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, because, you know, what does it say as you as a parent, right? It means that you didn't protect the child. So there's a lot. If there wasn't so much shame and guilt connected to all of this, it would be so much easier. It would have been such, you know, this would not be going on anymore. It just goes on because there's so much shame and guilt connected to it. And shame and guilt actually is a very, very low vibrational frequency. So what makes my work a little different in the way I look at things, I really look at anything us in life through an energetic perspective. And so when we just go to energy and energy levels, shame and guilt are very low vibrational frequencies. They vibrate at about 20 and 30. And anything that's below 200 is actually in the process of dying.
Huh.
And, you know, and that can be measured. Vibrational frequencies can be measured. And so for us, you know, anything like depression is a process, right, that's slowly basically leaning towards death. So for us to start to feel better, our task is to get ourselves into a space where our body and our whole being vibrates at least above 200 so that we can be life-sustaining.
So that sounds like an almost impossible task, 20 to 30 to above 200. I mean, we'll talk about that more as our conversation goes on. But that really sounds like a daunting task, even for the adults among us who may be listening right now. How on earth do you get from a vibrational level of 20 to 30 to 200? Is it hard? Is it easy? Is it doable?
It is totally doable, and it's easier than we think, and it takes focus. And at the same time, this is where we have power. We don't have power over anything else but this work. And when we focus on it, everything changes in our life because we change, right? We become a magnet to different things. When we're really low vibrational, what we're attracting is kind of the same kind of same old stuff and frustrating stuff. And so when we elevate, our life experience becomes completely different because we're a different person.
What is so...
And, go ahead. Yeah.
What is so critical, I think particularly for those who have been abused as children, is the active awareness that they are not stuck and that there is, in fact, power that they own that's theirs, that cannot be taken
exactly.
away. That's mm-hmm. just hugely important. Carolyn, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, you talk about your toilet floor wake-up moment, which sounds kind of interesting. Wake up moment. I've got to tell you, that sounds a little unpleasant.
It was very unpleasant, actually.
All right. Well, tell us about it. What happened?
So when I had the eating disorders, I would go through phases where I ate nothing, and then also phases where I was bulimic, where I would go to the store, spend $200 on food, and go home and eat it all. And then, you know, inadvertently, the food had to come out somehow. And sometimes it was easy, you know, to make yourself throw up. And sometimes it wasn't. And this was an evening where it wasn't. And I don't want to call it an illusion, but it's a state where you're beside yourself, basically. I grabbed a toothbrush and stuck it down my throat in an attempt to make myself throw up, and the toothbrush got stuck.
Oh my.
And for a moment, I couldn't breathe. I couldn't swallow, I couldn't breathe. And my parents, or my mom, I think, you know, when she was really scared at times because she knew what was going on, she had said, you know, you'll end up like Mama Cass someday. You'll just, you know, we'll just find you choked to death on the bathroom floor kind of thing. And so when that happened with the toothbrush, I just heard my mom's voice. You know, it's like, this is it, you know. And then luckily the toothbrush loosened and it came out and I could breathe again. But from that moment on, I realized, oh, my God, if I don't do something differently, I am going to die.
Yeah,
and I'm not going to have children. And, you know, and I really, really wanted to have children. So my children are really, they kept me, like, going and my future children at that point. Yeah.
It sounds like a horrifying, almost unspeakable moment. But I'm glad that the toothbrush was dislodged. What were your first steps after realizing that you had almost killed yourself?
Well, you know, I was kind of in a shock, and just I was basically open to anything. And my mom at that time and I actually weren't talking at all. And nevertheless, she invited me to the family constellation workshop that I shared about in the beginning of our interview. And because that just had happened, I actually said yes and went. If that hadn't happened, I would have just been like, "Stay away! I don't want to hear from you," you know, and just pushed her away. But because it had happened, I was actually open to the invitation, and I went. My mom didn't even go. She just paid for me and just said, just go. I won't even be there. You don't have to see me. And, yeah.
So it's interesting because as much as your mom did not want to hear about the pain that was in your life, she was also aware of the fact that there was pain and that something needed to happen.
Yeah, I mean, she knew about the eating disorders, and she knew, you know, about the bulimia and so forth. She just, and at that time, it had, you know, with her boyfriend, that had come out, like that, you know, that came out, like we shared about. I told her at some point because she asked me why I was behaving so strangely, and then I told her, and so you know, it was known at that. I mean, it was known even though she wanted to kind of denied, but that was known. And, you know, she obviously blamed herself for everything. That's what moms do. Right? And obviously, you know, she's my mother, so she loves me. And like every mother, mothers don't give up, luckily.
The title of your book is Blossom. And on the cover is a beautiful blossom. But the title means more than just a beautiful blossom. Can you tell us more about Blossom and what it stands for?
Yeah. So when I first realized that I really had to write a book about this, I was driving one day, and this picture, the image of the book cover, pretty much exactly as it actually turned out, popped into my head, and I could see, you know, I could see the word blossom. I didn't know the subtitle, but I could see the blossom. I could see the cherry blossoms, I could see the colors, and I could see the woman, kind of, the woman that's like jumping and feeling free. And then I was like, okay, it's a nice feeling, you know, it feels uplifting, and it feels like it makes it so people can maybe feel like this is doable, right? It's not doomy or gloomy, it's actually uplifting. And then I realized that it actually is an acronym for the steps that I took myself through. And so it's actually, the book is structured in seven 7 weeks, and every week is spent on one step, and there's exercises for every day in that week on that step. And if you like, I can just go through the steps real quick.
I would love that, yes.
So the first step is about bringing your mind on board so that you don't have to encounter resistance, because anytime we try to change, you know, the subconscious wants to keep us safe and the known is safe. So that's why it's so hard to change anything. And so the first step is to really bring the subconscious on board so that we can move forward and create the change that we want. And then the second step is landing within yourself. Part of how you get yourself from a negative vibrational state into a positive one is using your body as an instrument. And in order to do so, you have to first learn to be in your body and learn what that means. And so the second step teaches you, there's different ways that I teach you how to do that so that you can start to learn to use your body as an instrument. And then step three is open to intuition, because that's the big part.
Let me ask you a question. Mm-hmm. Before you go to step three. Step two, landing within yourself, being in your body. For people who have been exposed to abuse, for a lot of folks, the last thing they want to do is to be in their bodies. Mm-hmm. They're really good at doing everything to be outside of their bodies. So mm-hmm. can you share with us maybe one tiny snippet of one of the exercises that you encourage people to consider when they're working on that second step?
Yeah, one of it is to really make a connection to your inner child, for example, because the inner child still lives in your heart and is there and is probably locked away. And I actually have the book isn't just a book. It comes with guided meditations that you can download and so forth. And so one of the things in that step is actually a guided meditation where you can meet your inner child and make a connection and then also learn to listen to it. That's one thing. And then the other thing, really learning to have physical sensations. So, for example, and this is something anybody can pick up right now, is when you're doing the dishes, allow yourself to feel the water in your hands. When you're walking, take off your shoes, allow yourself to feel the floor. When you're taking a shower, allow yourself to feel the water on your head, on your skin. All those things, all the things that you do that include, you know, touching right now, if you're sitting at a desk listening, put your hand on the desk and feel the surface. Is it smooth? Is it cold? Anything that involves your senses and using your body to sense things outside of you will later help you to do that inwardly also.
So you can start in a very tiny way so that as you mm-hmm. build through it, it's not so scary. If you're starting and you're focusing on, let's say, taking a shower or walking in the sand, that's a lot less scary than focusing on something at a deeper level.
Yeah, and actually, when you do this work and really center on your body, it's never scary because it's all about sensation, right? So emotions are scary to us. Sensations aren't. You know, anger is maybe scary to us, but actually feeling a knot in your stomach is not scary. And so this is why this is a very gentle approach. Doesn't, you know, require you to go back and be traumatized. Doesn't require you to not know how to function because you're so emotionally upheavaled, you know, and because it really focuses on you and you being in your body and using your body. When trauma happens, so your body is your house. Right? We live in our body here on this earth, so it's our house. When trauma happens, it's as if lightning would strike a house. It's energy that's directed at the house, at our house, that the house cannot deal with. It's too much. And so what happens, you know, when lightning strikes a house, the circuits just break and melt, and, you know, the power cannot run the way it did before. And so it's the same with our body. When from the trauma, and it could be trauma over time, right, accumulated, or just one really scary event, it doesn't matter. It literally fries our nerves physically and energetically. So when I'm saying energetically, I actually mean our energy system, which is our nervous system. It is measurable. It's scientific. It's not woohoo, you know, kind of out there in terms of unseen or anything like that. It's actual energy that our body lives off and that makes us feel good and makes us function. that when trauma has happened, doesn't flow the way it needs to flow anymore.
So yes, continue, please.
Go ahead. And that's why it's so important that you're in your body, because your nervous system is in your body, and you're the only one that is in your body, and your nervous system needs you to heal it. It's almost like this energy has created frozen paths in your body, and by you putting attention on it, it unfreezes it, and then the water can run, and it can, you know, go into your bloodstream, and then you can excrete it, and part of it will become part of you. But then it can be metabolized and leave you, and you then that, you know, when you don't have, so imagine you have all these icy parts of you, that's what makes you low vibrational, and when you start thawing it and metabolizing it and transforming it out of your body, that's how you become high vibrational, to simplify it.
So being able to know and feel and allow yourself to be present and aware of your own body, your own power, is a very freeing, empowering process to go through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it doesn't take a lot of time. You can do this in, like, 3 minutes here and there throughout the day. Right? It's something that you can do like you're breathing, basically. It can just become second nature, where you do this as, like, a maintenance or a hygiene. And anytime you're triggered or something, like, you're starting to use triggers as a welcomed occasion, because you're like, oh, this trigger is showing me where the ice block is, and now I just have to, instead of like being completely identified with it, let me just put my attention on it and feel it, right? So that's a skill, and the book is structured in a way so that you learn the skill before you actually start working with the triggers, right? Because that's the tricky part to get overwhelmed by when you get triggered.
You
right?
know, so
you
often
you get triggered into fight and flight.
So often, persons who have experienced abuse live in a state of fear over one thing or another. And as I was going through Blossom, and even as I listen to you describe it now, you find a way, you have found a way to reduce the fear, which then allows folks to take that first step. Talk about being open to your intuition. What do you mean by that?
So one of the reasons why people don't feel safe is because they have, you know, they have lost trust in themselves and are disconnected from their intuition. Your intuition is the connection between you and your higher self, and your higher self is eternal, it's fearless, it always knows what's right for you. And, you know, when we're not connected to it, it can feel really scary and unsettling because we really don't know. And the only way you can be connected to your intuition is through your body. So if you're not in your body, you know, of course you don't feel safe. Of course you feel constantly afraid and scared and so forth. And also, you know, it's known that when trauma has happened, your brain got altered, basically, and you're much more living in a state of high alert, basically. You know, there's three parts to our brain, the reptilian brain on the bottom, midbrain, and the higher brain. And all our creativity, our resources, our genius, trust, and so forth, those are things that are in our higher part of our brain. Our reptilian brain only knows survival. And unfortunately, when you've gone through trauma, you're rendered to a, you know, somewhat the reptilian-like state, in terms of you're just always looking and making sure that you're safe. Right? That becomes the top priority, instead of thriving being the top priority. And so learning to be in your body will help to flip that switch between your brain, so that the reptilian brain can relax again. And, you know, we need it in emergency situations. It's really good to be able to know what to do in survival. But in your everyday life, you don't need to just be constantly concerned with survival. You should be. I believe that we're all here to enjoy life, and it's impossible when you're in fight or flight. So your intuition, you know, so when you learn to relax your brain, that's when you can connect to your intuition, and that's when you can feel safe. That's when you can feel at peace, when your nervous system and your brain is actually relaxed. That's not just you, for all of us. That's when we experience peace and love. And those are very high vibrational states. So the more you can experience those states, you can go from, you know, fairly low vibrational states to higher vibrational states. 600.
And the experience of peace is one that actually is possible. That's not just something that you read about in a book.
Yeah, no, it is possible. And it is really, we experience peace when our nervous system is in balance.
What do you mean when you ask the reader to see with eyes of truth?
Yeah, so this is the most controversial step in the book, in step four. That step has to do with what's responsibility. Unfortunately, a lot of people think that when we talk about responsibility, it means that they basically have to say, oh, yeah, you know, it was my fault because, you know, I, like in my case, oh, yeah, I brought this on myself because I wore miniskirts. That's not what is meant when we talk about responsibility. We all have a responsibility to be who we came here to be, and I know it can be very tricky when you've gone through abuse and you feel like this has happened to you and nobody else knows and nobody understands how hard it is and nobody understands how bad you feel about yourself and nobody understands how, you know, how much harder things for you are because you don't feel good about yourself and so forth. So it's very easy to get stuck in a victim kind of place, rightfully so almost, right, because this thing happened to you. Nevertheless, you know, you also came here to figure out how you can have the best life possible. And so the responsibility is to shift it and to see, okay, if I came here to learn, and if it's true that I'm here to have the best experience possible, what do I need to see for real? Like in my case, I had to see that I have a tendency to give away my power, that I do that. And with realizing that, I also realized that I have the power to not do it. Right? And from that, everything changed. And so I'm not saying that it's the same pattern for everybody, but it's probably somewhat similar. And so seeing with the eyes of truth means to see the gifts in it and to reframe it so that moving forward, you can be free just for your own sake. Right? So with the whole Me Too movement and so forth, I think it's great that it's going on. But what I see happening also is that we're staying stuck in, like, whose fault is it? My fault? Is it their fault? Staying in a paradigm of fault. And fault is connected to shame and blame and guilt and again, low vibrational. So step four really invites you to go beyond that and just for your own sake elevate the conversation so that you can reclaim your power and then actually... you know, you'll never, I think there's a tendency that we think, oh, I'll never be who I was, I'm broken by this. But actually, you know, yes, you won't be the person that you were before. You'll be a new person, and you'll be a person that you love and that has a great life. You know, that opportunity did not get taken from you.
And you can be
a powerful person. Might feel like that right now, but it's not the truth.
Yeah, so many people believe that, well, that they're... you know, as a child, when you experience abuse, your power is gone because you're a child. Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. the reality that as an adult, you can actually tap into your power, that it is there, that you can live it, and that it's not scary, and that it's yours, that's an amazing place to be.
Yes, and so many times, you know, we do have choice. And I think a lot of the times when, you know, when we're adults and sexual abuse actually happens, I'm not even convinced that the guys know that they're, you know, necessarily doing something that we don't want, because as women, so often we don't think we have a choice, and also we don't want to hurt anybody. You know, maybe we were in a situation where at first we thought we might like it, and then it turns and we don't say no. So I think there's, you know, there's a space where we can really see and look at, okay, what do we contribute as women? You know, when we're older, obviously, I'm not saying for children, but as women, when we're older, why are we not saying no? Why are we getting ourselves in certain situations? And then for the men also, right? Because I actually do believe that some men they have no clue that. I know in my own life, I know there's probably some people where I felt really violated, and I'm sure they have no clue because I never told them and I didn't stop them, and. So there's a lot of space for exploration around what's really true and what's not true, and to see where we each can step into our power and know that we all have choices. We always have choice.
Carolyn Hauser, author of Blossom. We're going to take a break, and we will continue in just a moment. My name is Pamela Brewer, and you're listening to Mind Talk. Carolyn, throughout the book, you reference women. You're talking to women. And yet we know that men and boys are assaulted as well. It seems like you made a conscious choice to focus on the folks who we believe are the most affected by childhood sexual abuse. Is that what happened, or you tell me?
Well, because I'm a woman, you know, most when I tell my story, it's mostly women that resonate with me. And also what I actually have found a lot, that I get a lot of support from men that are married to someone who has gone through trauma. So indirect, it speaks to men. And oftentimes I've seen, you know, men basically being grateful that I do this because they had something that they could give to their partner, mother, sister, you know, cousin, friend, whatever. And so this has worked better. It's just organically developed that way. And I do have men, you know, that come and ask if the book would work for them. But I think for men, there's still such a more bigger taboo, you know, coming out and saying it even. And
it's true.
And there's a lot of men who also, you know, went to sexual trauma, and at the same time, almost every person I've ever encountered has some kind of shame and guilt around sexuality, right? We all need sexual healing, even
true.
If we haven't been traumatized, and we've had awkward moments, or our sexuality is our most sensitive energetic place, basically, because it's so connected to our core and who we are and our creation, our creativity, right? So it's also the first place where our power can get taken away from us. And so people, you know, so when sexual abuse happens, it has nothing to do with actually sex or lust. I think it really has to do with power.
Exactly.
And so, you know, the easiest way to disempower someone is to go, you know, to the sexual center. And so we've all been disempowered to what the church has taught us and, you know.
Through many sources, absolutely.
Yes.
There is a very interesting question that you ask the readers of your book, the listeners to your work, to ask of themselves. And the question is, what do you believe about yourself? That's a powerful, scary question for many. What is your hope that people would do in response to that question?
Well, first of all, that they would really see, you know, look and see what they truly believe, and then hopefully that they see that almost all those beliefs are wrong, because, you know, you have read the book. My belief is really that our essence is all love and joy and peace, right? The higher vibrational frequencies, that's our essence. And our path on the earth is to realize, right, to, that's another way of looking at it, you know, another way of looking, going from low vibrational to high vibrational would be to actually be here and realize our full potential, our true essence, and our true essence is that we're all innocent, that we're all at our core love and joy and peace. Right, and so anything else that we believe about ourselves, right, that we're broken or that we're unworthy or that we're not lovable, all those things aren't true. They just keep us small. So my hope is that people can see, you know, see what they've been doing to themselves. I mean, that's what happened to me, you know. I saw how, wow, that's what I've been doing to myself all my life.
It can be pretty extraordinary when you realize what you've done to yourself. In essence, you have helped your abuser to continue the abuse.
Yes.
Unknowingly so.
Yes. And, you know, and it's programmed. You know, that's how we, it's a cultural and it's a, it's just the way we do it, right? We keep ourselves small. That's how we've been unconsciously taught that.
You say that when you are able to trust yourself, you can slowly learn how to trust others. Talk about that. What's the connection between trusting self and trusting others?
So trusting yourself has a lot to do with really learning to listen to your intuition. And so when you can do that, then you can also do that in relationship to other people. Right. When you learn how to follow your intuition, you learn how to follow your intuition, period, in any situation.
So you aren't so alone. You don't feel so frightened.
Exactly. Yeah.
You make a distinction between integration and healing. What is the distinction?
Healing, you know, healing, I think, has the connotation that we fix something. Like, you know, we're a car and we go to the shop and the mechanic figures out what's wrong and then he fixes it. Whereas with integration, it really means that you have to digest something. You have to digest the icy parts, right, the trauma parts, and you alone can do that. And through you metabolizing it, it part of it becomes part of you and the rest leaves you. Right? So it's a more of a chemical process, an alchemical process, actually, right? Like turning lead into gold, and some stuff that's no longer serving leaves in the process, and the other part stays. And so it's very different than just thinking you put just two broken pieces together.
So in healing, it's like you're fixing the broken thing, and with integration, it sounds like you're perhaps tapping into and rounding out the healthy whole of a person.
Exactly.
Okay. Can you give us an example of what an integration experience would look like? You talk about a client by the name of Sherry. Can you share her story?
I don't have her story at the top of my head right now, but I can share with you. So, for example, the reason why I was able to overcome the eating disorders is because that integrated into me, right? So when I did the family constellation, before I did it, I always thought that I was fighting the eating disorder. I was, it was killing me. It was after me. You know, it was the thing why I was suffering. And what the constellation showed, though, was that the eating disorder was actually the thing that kept me alive because it gave me something to do.
Interesting.
Otherwise, I would have had to really feel my feelings, and I wouldn't, you know, I wasn't strong enough to feel them. And so that then made, you know, that completely transformed the way I looked at it and also put me into a place of gratitude, which is a very different energetic space. And so it became, you know, it became part of me, and I said thank you to it, and then the destructive patterns could just leave. So, you know, I don't have any problems with food anymore. Before, you could have put a plate of chocolate in front of me, and I could have sworn to myself I'm not going to touch it, and within 5 minutes I would have eaten the whole thing. Now, you know, I can eat whatever I want whenever I want. There's no compulsiveness to it anymore. it's just completely gone. So it has integrated, right? If I had just fixed it, I would maybe be able to control it with my willpower, but it would be a thing that I would have constantly to think about and work on, and, you know, that's the difference. When something's integrated, it's just gone, you know.
So instead of zapping your energy, you're allowed to put your energy in a different direction?
Essentially, because I know, you know, the eating disorder was a very low vibrational pattern, so because that has left, I operate at a different level now. I am literally a different person who doesn't have that struggle anymore, and that's the same for when you integrate. The integration process, actually, the stuff that you integrate becomes like a fuel, like a booster that lifts you up to the next level.
I see. I got it. With the family constellations work that you do, is that work that you do with an individual looking at the whole of their family history, or is it literally family members in the room doing family therapy?
No, it's with an individual, and sometimes it's not even the family. It is called family constellations because originally it was started with, you know, family work.
I see.
But you can actually use it for any kind of system. So you could constellate your body. You could constellate your work. You can constellate inner parts. And also oftentimes, you know, when I start working with someone, we do the family of origin because so much of our imprinting comes from that. And when I say constellating, actually the reason why it's called constellating is because we use representatives. So when it's done in a group, let's say, you know, you came to me and you wanted to clear your relationship with your mother, I would have you pick somebody from the audience for your mother and someone for you, and then you would place those people in the room. And then me as the facilitator, I would interview these people and about the dynamic, how they feel. And the magic of this is that all of a sudden they know, they know, because there's a knowing field that we all have access to, but we ourselves can't really access it because of our ego structure, right? So we need other people that don't know nothing about us, that are just neutral, to stand in for us, that and then the process can reveal what really the issue is. And so you can do this with anything.
You say that there's a knowing field that we all have access to. What do you mean by that?
So because everything is energy, everything is known on a, you know, on a spiritual energetic level.
I see.
So, and that field can be accessed by anybody, and, you know, most people haven't learned to do it. And you, when you learn to use your intuition, that's also how you access this field, right? The field of infinite possibilities and all-knowing, you know, you could call it consciousness.
You talk about shutdowns. What are shutdowns?
Shutdown is really another way of saying when your brain goes into fight or flight, right? When you just basically need to function and are really cut off from your emotions and your survival brain takes over, and your nervous system literally shuts down. You're not yourself anymore. You become a scared dragon, scared little lizard.
So does one. When you talk about your shutdowns, do we have a sense of what physically happens to our bodies when we shut down?
I think so. You know, for most people, they feel stiff, disconnected, maybe a tummy ache, maybe, an emptiness in your chest, definitely like a downward feeling, a heaviness, a more constricted feeling.
So there are lots of physical cues that you might be shutting down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And for those who aren't used to paying attention to themselves, even if they can identify the physical cues, that's an important beginning to enhance self-awareness. Mm-hmm. Yes? No?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
And I actually have a free gift on my website that helps people to then learn what to do with it. You know, recognizing it is the first step, and then what to do with it to transform it into positive energy. There's a process that I use and teach, and it's a free gift on my website for people if you want to share that.
We love free gifts. What's your website?
It's womeninintheflow.com.
Okay, womeninintheflow, all one word, .com.
Exactly. exactly.
Okay. Tell us about core wounds. In the few minutes that we, in the very few minutes that we have left, can you give us a sense of what a core wound is?
Yeah, so in my example, my core wound is thinking that I'm not worthy because my body protected me.
Ah.
Right, so my stuff always comes back to me feeling like I'm not worthy, I'm not important. And so that's how I see the world, you know, when I'm in my small self, that's how I see the world, and that's my work, right? And that's why I give away my power and so forth. And, you know, there's we all have similar wounds, that we all don't feel like we're enough or, you know, that we're loved enough and so forth. And so there's similarities, and we each have our own variation on the theme.
Gotcha. Carolyn, let me ask you, as we close out our conversation today, just to give your website one more time as we run out of here.
It's womenintheflow.com.
Terrific. Thank you, Carolyn, so much for joining us today. That is Carolyn Hauser Carson, the author of Blossom, Your Seven-Step Journey to Healing Childhood Sexual Abuse and Creating Your Dream Life. And thank you for joining me on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk is brought to you daily as an educational public service. It is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a mental health, medical health, or other professional. You can always listen to Mind Talk on demand by going to MYNDTALK. I'd love to know where in the world you are as you're listening today, so do send an email to me at Pamela, that's P-A-M-E-L-A, at mindtalk.org. I'd also love to hear your questions or comments about this or any other Mind Talk program. So once again, that is MYNDTALK.org. And remember always, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. You take care.